Well, good afternoon, Juno. Your host today for Juno Afternoon, Pat Moore. You're in tune with KTOO News. Today on the show, we'll be getting a preview of tonight's Evening at Egan presentation. It's called Big Arts in a Small Town, and Art Roach will tell us what's going on. Authors Royal and Nancy Bidwell will be here to discuss a new book they have called Soul Shaking Grief. Kim Metcalf will come in to highlight the City Museum's First Friday exhibit. Photographer Terry Tibbett will highlight her First Friday exhibit. And author Terry Sloat will talk about a presentation she's doing tonight at the Downtown Library, Visual Art and Story Connecting with Kids. The weather, guess what, Juno? After these fogs and rains that we're going through right now clear off, then all the way through Tuesday, we're looking at mostly cloudy without the word rain mentioned in any of those forecasts. National A-Nib News in a moment, but first this.
Thanks, Pat. This is Casey Kelly from the KTOO Newsroom with some updates from Tuesday night's municipal election. Absentee and question ballots have now been counted, and Merrill Sanford has been elected the mayor of the city and borough of Juneau. Sanford finishes with 4,099 votes to Cheryl Geebe's 3,440. The other big surprise from today's vote count is Proposition 1, which was failing on election night. Proposition 1 has now passed with 3,888 yes votes to 3,815 no votes. That measure allows the city to sell $25 million in general obligation bonds to pay for various capital improvement projects. Other winners in Tuesday's election remain the same. Proposition 2 passed. It's the five-year extension of the city's temporary 1% sales tax. District 1 assembly seat goes to Lauren Jones. District 2 assembly seat to Jerry Nankervis. And Phyllis Carlson, Andy Story, and Destiny Sargent were elected to the school board. All these results are unofficial until the canvas board meets next Tuesday, but are not expected to change when the board meets and certifies the results. Pat, thanks for letting us break into your show. We'll have more results on All Things Considered coming up at 4:30.
Thank you for the update.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Tristan Ottone, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Yesterday marked the first annual National Day of Remembrance for missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada. In the past, small events have been coordinated across the country to remember missing and murdered Indigenous women. But October 4th is the first time the Assembly of First Nations, Canada's national political First Nations body, has made the event a national action. Over 600 women, girls, and men have gone missing or murdered in Canada over the last 20 years. And Sheila North Wilson with the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs says in Winnipeg, figures for missing or murdered Indigenous women are well above the national average.
Here in Manitoba, 81% of women that go missing and murdered are First Nations women, Indigenous women. And here in Winnipeg particularly, 64% of the murder cases are First Nations women, and about 80 of them are missing.
Wilson says she hopes national events will help bring international aid and scrutiny to the situation. The United Nations initiated an inquiry into the country's missing women in December of last year. Meanwhile, in British Columbia, a recent break in an investigation into mysterious deaths and disappearances along the province's so-called Highway of Tears has offered hope for more answers. DNA evidence has linked a U.S. sex offender to the death of a 16-year-old who disappeared in 1974. Bobby Jack Fowler died in an Oregon prison in 2006. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
Highway 16 in British Columbia's interior was dubbed the Highway of Tears because dozens of women have disappeared along its route. Most of them were First Nations. Since 1969, 18 women were either murdered or disappeared along the route. The discovery of DNA evidence linking suspected serial killer Bobby Jack Fowler to one of the murders in 1974 has brought police closer to solving the mystery of what happened to the others. Fowler is also considered a strong suspect in at least two other murders along Highway 16. Mary Teege is with the Carrier-Sa County Family Services. She says there have long been suspicions that a serial killer was at work in the British Columbia interior.
But if you look at when Fowler was convicted in 1996 and was incarcerated, there are still missing and murdered women after that date. So, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done, not only in investigating the past murders and missing women, but also to really try to prevent anybody else going missing.
The police investigation is trying to determine whether there were one or more serial killers. TG says there are many other women in BC whose deaths cannot be explained by Fowler, and their families are still waiting for answers. Even police say those answers may never come. Aboriginal activists have long complained that police were too slow to move on the murders or acknowledge the possibility a serial killer was preying on vulnerable women along the highway. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
According to the New York Times, the chairman of the Oglala Sioux Tribe's Law and Order Committee, James Big Boy, says he plans to submit a proposal to the tribal council to allow alcohol sales on Pine Ridge. Big Boy says his proposal would cut down on tribal members traveling to White Clay, Nebraska to purchase alcohol and would help the tribe raise revenue for education and treatment programs while controlling alcohol consumption on the reservation. Earlier this week, a federal judge dismissed a lawsuit filed by the tribe against alcohol dealers in White Clay. The tribe blames them for alcohol-related problems on the reservation.
There come a time, Kimosabe, when good men must wear masks.
And this week, the trailer for the new Lone Ranger movie hit the web, featuring Johnny Depp in the role of Tonto. Photos of Depp's costume, complete with a stuffed crow or raven for a hat, stirred controversy in Indian country when they became available online. Although his appearance on the Navajo Nation for filming caused excitement, and his attendance of Comanche Fair brought hundreds of gawkers. Depp was adopted into the Comanche Nation in May and given a Comanche name which reportedly translates to shapeshifter. During this month in 2003, the Navajo Nation Council confirmed Claudine Bates Arthur as Chief Justice of the tribe's Supreme Court. Arthur was a pioneer in the legal field for Navajo women and the first woman to lead the Navajo Nation's judicial system. She passed away in 2004 of pancreatic cancer. This is National Native News. I'm Tristan Ottone.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
7 minutes after 3 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Juneau afternoon, Pat Moore, your host today. My first guest here is Art Roach, who's taking a little time off from the directing seat at the Perseverance Theater's presentation of Mice and Men to talk to us now and tonight with Linda Rosenthal and Kyle Wiley Pickett. They're doing a presentation for Evening at Egan up at the university called Big Arts in a Small Town. And I have to agree, Art.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
And thanks to UAS for hosting the event and Kyle for thinking of it.
Yeah. Well, as we were talking before we went on the air, one of the things that I note being the two-day host on this show is that every time I sit down behind the board here and interview people, at least two of my guests are here for some kind of cultural opportunity. And this show is on 5 days a week, which means that if my average is right, then half of our guests, or on the average maybe as many as 10 guests a week, are here to bring attention to some kind of cultural opportunity for Juneau. That's almost more than our share.
Yeah,
do we have to do something to earn this?
Maybe. I'm not sure. I think we're very fortunate. For the theater, we serve about 15,000 people a year in one way or another, between about two-thirds of that is main stage attendance, and then students in our education programs and attendance at those programs and other things, volunteers, that sort of thing. 15,000 people per year come through the door or click the turnstile, as it were. And when we were working on our strategic plan and trying to figure out the direction the theater would take, we did some comparisons. And if you extrapolate that to New York City, you'd have a theater that would draw about $4.5 million a year, which is more than the New York Yankees. So, and you'd need all of Lincoln Center running eight shows a week just in order to accommodate the subscribers. I mean, it's sort of insane. The per capita activity here is off the charts, and I don't know quite why it is, but I'm very grateful that it is. We're really fortunate.
I think Kyle, in the interview that I saw, I think the University of Alaska put it out, he said something to someone about the fact that he thinks it is the small size of Juneau that causes that. I think it's the geographic isolation as much as anything else.
Yeah.
We are an island nation, which basically means that either we do this or it doesn't happen. And so that puts the pressure on our own populace here to get into the arts and to express themselves, I think.
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of both, and I think we're also a fairly we're our own corner of the world, so the worldview in Alaska is what it is, and there, it's not really duplicated anywhere else. So if we don't make art about our place in the world, it won't be made. And then we're our own audience. So I think that's part of it, too, the isolation and then the quirkiness or the uniqueness about the scene here.
When you say art of, about our place, the other one of the really remarkable things is in every part of the state of Alaska, there is local art. And yeah. It's we're much prouder of our native culture, of mm-hmm. our history, of our Alaskan-ness than I've ever felt living anywhere else. No state I've ever been in, maybe Texas, has that kind of, of self-identity, you know, yeah. to that degree.
Yeah, I think that's right. And we're really fortunate that Indigenous cultures contact was more recent, and so the damage is less extensive, even though it is extensive. So we're closer to something genuine there than most other parts of North America, and that's a real blessing. And I think Alaskans know that, so we treasure that. And I also think our story is its own, so we tell that story. I remember being at a convening early in my time back in this job. I've been here twice, so 3 or 4 years ago, that the State Arts Council had up in Anchorage, and we were asked, you know, why make art in Alaska? And we went around a very large table, and I think the thing that I remember saying that was interesting was that Alaska, making a life in Alaska, is a creative endeavor. So it's not a conventional place to live, whether you're an artist or not. Just being in Alaskan requires a creative approach to and a commitment to making a life here. And it's very similar, I think, getting up in the morning or coming to Alaska to the leap that a dancer might make when they enter from the wing and try to recreate a piece of choreography, or a musician might make when they pick up their instrument and try to play those notes and recreate their performance that night, or a painter might make when they make the first mark on an empty canvas in order to start. There's a leap of faith that you're going to get to the end of that life here in Alaska and have made something. And I think that that makes us all a little bit more creative per capita or as a people than other places where it's not so challenging, it's not so in your face how unique the world is around you.
How do you envision tonight's presentation working? The three of you are going to be sitting up there in front of a room full of people who probably are coming knowing that they can ask questions and like that. So yeah. What's your plan?
The plan is just to talk with Kyle and Linda about it. And the three of us talk usually in different pairs all the time because we have similar challenges and do similar things. So it's a great idea to do get all three of us together. It's Kyle Pickett's idea, and hats off to him. So he gave us some things to think about, but said we'll just have a conversation. And I think we start at 7, and we'll go for a while. So and I'm sure there'll be plenty of time to take questions. Yeah.
I think it's wonderful these particular three people, because I think my sense is that Pickett has really made the Juno Orchestra into
amazing work.
And you've done a marvelous job since you took over Perseverance. You had a great set of shoes to step into. The theater has been a success for a long, long time, and Linda Rosenthal, of course, is famous.
Right.
So the three of you up on the stage in front of folks has got to be a tremendous draw. But then the opportunity to be able to raise your hand out in the audience and say, well, what do you think about this? And hear a little back. Yeah.
Yeah. Looking forward to hearing what people want to hear.
Yeah.
What people want to ask.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe you'll change your next season or something
right.
like that.
Right.
Do you
right.
have it all planned at this point?
The season. We have a pretty good idea. It takes where we are now is we're taking the season that we want to do and then plugging it into a budget and seeing whether a red or a black number comes out the other side of the spreadsheet. And that takes another 6 weeks or so. And then in December, we'll look at where we are that we know we can afford and check with key artists that we think we need. So we're on track to announce in probably March is when we'll make a public announcement.
When we'll
it's
learn.
Quite a process.
Now, you're still selling season tickets for this season,
right? They are still available,
right?
Yeah. And it's there are very few seats left for Of Mice and Men, but there are 4-packs and 3-packs. So if you miss out on a subscription, including Of Mice and Men, because you know, you just missed it or already bought a single ticket, you can buy the remaining four shows and get the savings and get, this is, I think, the best subscriber benefit, is the flexibility. So if your plans change, you can exchange your ticket free of charge as many times as you need to, and only subscribers get that benefit. People who buy a single ticket can exchange, but it costs $5 each time.
Well, as a person who knows that we have almost a flood of opportunities for every Friday and Saturday and Sunday night in Alaska, in Juneau particularly, that kind of flexibility is really welcomed, at least in my household, because it says, okay, so we can afford, we can take the risk of buying whole seasons.
Savings and flexibility, and as shows sell out, you have to plan ahead.
Really well. Well, we have an arts event coming up tonight, of course. That's the Talk at Evening Needs, starting at 7 o'clock with Linda Rosenthal, Art Roach, and Kyle Pickett. Conversation from the stage, questions from the audience on the topic of big arts in a small town. And here's a little music from a guy who's doing a show tonight. Well, actually, he's just playing the piano. This show is put together by Junoites who have been studying with Barney McClure for the last week and putting together their presentations. And tonight we get to see the show over at the Jack. Thanks. Piano stylings that you'll be able to hear some of tonight, but mostly the focus tonight is on the vocalists themselves, because tonight is the big show where a group of people who've been working with Barney for the week will be able to present their vocal stylings that he's helped them to perfect, and it's all at the Jack tonight at 8 o'clock. My next two guests have just finished a... I guess we would call it a book. It kind of has aspects of a comic book and a website and a photo montage and all that sort of stuff. The book is called Soul Shaking Grief. I'm looking at the teen edition. And this is a book that is part of the mission of Forget Me Not Mission Incorporated. And it says here on their little flyer, our mission is to stop the insanity of impaired, distracted, and dangerous driving. Will you help out? So, welcome. My guests are Royal and Nancy Bidwell, the authors of this work. Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, I guess one of the questions would be if you can kind of explain to the audience how you were inspired to do this.
Well, this book was an inspiration because we put our first book out 2 years ago, just Soul Shaking Grief, and it was full of adult stories of impaired drivers, victims of the impaired drivers. So everybody kind of said, why don't you put out a teen book? You know, that's such a huge problem, the underage drinking problem. So we spent a year doing it, working with teens all over Alaska, even had a cover contest, and a little girl from Fairbanks won the drawing on the cover contest. She designed that. Her name is Sarah Webb from West Valley. So the whole book, it's printed in Anchorage at AT Publishing. So the whole book is totally Alaskan. We've got it in just about every school in Alaska now, every high school and middle school, I should say. And we think that from what we're hearing from the teens, that it's become a real big help. They're sitting down, they're looking at it, and they're concentrating on stories because those are their peers that have written them. So it's not an adult telling them, don't do this, don't do that. These are teens that have been through all this telling them their experience.
Some of these survivor stories are truly amazing. It's just a wonder that some of the comebacks are incredible, but the causation of what caused them to have to do that comeback is really the horror of the whole thing.
Yes.
Royal,
mm-hmm.
Nancy said you've been getting feedback from teenagers. What have the teens been saying to you about the book?
Well, a lot of them are kind of, I guess, surprised, shocked at what their peers have gone through, and some of them are taking it to heart because they have come to realize that through their own experience and their friends and sometimes family members have gone through some really serious things, tragedies that could have cost them a life, or in some cases did cost somebody they knew their life, and it just really brings a message home. So we feel pretty good about this thing because at least some of them are getting the message, and that's what we're all about, public awareness and public education of this problem statewide. And another really neat aspect of it is some of the adults around these kids are getting the message because of this. Mm-hmm. They're taking this book home and they're talking about, look, so-and-so had an experience that's affected their life, and they talk about it. So some of the adults are getting exposed to this too, and that's pretty important.
There was a section in, I think it's the teen edition, I looked at both, and they kind of flow together, but didn't you have a section in there that has to do with recognizing when you may be drifting toward, yeah, it's in the teen edition,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
When might you be drifting toward alcoholism?
Yes. That's real important.
It was really good because it mm-hmm. was written from a very personal standpoint, mm-hmm. but the list was not in any kind of technical terminology. It was about life. It was about, mm-hmm. These are the things that might be happening. Your homework might be, your grades might be dropping off and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it was something about how to know when alcohol might be becoming a problem.
Exactly, because a lot of kids will drink and they don't think they have a problem. They're just having fun and skipping school and doing all kinds of things. But then when something drastic happens to one of their friends, then they realize, oh, wait a minute, maybe I do have a problem. And they will seek help. That's our biggest thing, too, is motivating them to go seek help from somebody else, whether it's a nurse at school, a counselor, or whatever, or a pastor at their church, or whatever. We've given them a lot of options where they can go and seek help. So that's really important. Another thing real important in the book that we wanted to point out was that we have concentrated on the binge drinking. I don't know about in Juneau, but in Anchorage and Wasilla, and even down Kenai, we've lost several teens to binge drinking, and the other kids don't know what to do. They just prop them up by the toilet and go on with the party and think that they're okay. Well, they're not. They find them the next morning, and they're dead. Mm-hmm. So they need to know. The kids need to know what to do in these situations, to call 911 if there's repeated vomiting and different ways. We concentrate on getting the message across to them.
Yeah, alcoholism is such a difficult problem for those of us who are not alcoholics to fully understand. It's really tough. I think the most helpful thing for me has been the fact that I, through some of my activities, I've come into contact with a lot of recovered alcoholics or recovering alcoholics. And that really helps to establish a perspective here because these are men mostly that I've talked to, and they... their stories almost always tell me that they knew that they were doing wrong, but they couldn't sort it out because the booze was too heavy in them and they just couldn't even think through it. And so they just kept doing it because once you start down that path, then you've given up judgment, and the judgment is what would stop you from that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's...
Well, that's the educational aspect of the book. It gives our teens a lot of information, just good information, so that when they get into a situation, they'll understand what's going on, and it'll give them at least some ideas what they can do. So that's our hope, that the kids will read it, and you know, some of them are going to go out and party anyway, but at least when they get in a situation that's dangerous, they'll know what's happening.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the books, too, we've gotten them into all the youth facilities across Alaska. Mm-hmm. So they are actually making the residents in McLaughlin, and we went to the youth facility here today. They make the kids read a story. They actually let them pick a story out. Do like a report on it, a book report on it. Mm-hmm. So they're actually making them read them, and in fact, a lot of places are doing them. There's over 65 agencies all across Alaska, Alaska Family Services, and a lot of alcohol treatment centers, and they're making them read the book. So that's really good because they can just thumb through it, you know, and not really understand it. But if they actually start reading different pages, it's like, wow, this really hits home and helps them.
Yeah, because it's not just all survivor stories. There's also stories from the parents and siblings of people who have been killed in these accidents and like that. And I think that's... sometimes that is an extremely dramatic thing to read, because then the consequences that are beyond just the person who's been killed come fairly clear in your mind. What's the next plan for the book?
Well, actually, this is the first 5,000.
Okay.
We were just a small nonprofit. We just barely got this paid for, so now we're doing the next 5,000. We've even got a few extra stories we're going to add to the next book, the next printing. And so... yeah, we're out. These are free to the public, but of course we take donations on our website, so we are trying to raise the money for the next book.
How does someone get a hold of a copy of it?
They can. There are several places. Now, today we just set up a rack here in Juneau at Safeway. So there's a rack in the entryway. It's marked free to the public. You can go ahead and take a book there. If all else fails and you can't find one here, you can get us on our website at www.forgetmenotmission.com. You can call us at 978-7809. We can ship a book out. We like to ask for the postage, of course, when we do that, but still. Or the book is online. You can read it on our website. You can read the first book on the website, too, so that's helpful.
Yeah, so let's assume that someone is moved by what we've said here and would like to help you out in this process. How would they donate?
Get on the website, and there's a donate button on there. You push the donate button, and it'll take you right through several easy steps.
Well, they can mail it.
Yeah. Or mail a check, yeah.
Yeah, our address is right in the front page of the book.
And any help we can get is very much appreciated and very important, because these first 5,000, we weren't able to get as many into the high schools as we would like to. So we need to print at least another 5,000 to get them into the students.
Royal and Nancy Bidwell, the book is called Soul Shaking Grief. This is the teen edition. The original, the first edition is also available at their website, which is forgetmenotmission.com. Go out and take a look at the book. Pick up a free copy in the entrance to Safeway, and tell all your friends and neighbors that they should read a copy as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 5th of October, 2012. It's the birthday of the philosopher of the French Enlightenment, Denis Diderot, born in Langres, France, in 1713. A good friend of Jean-Jacques Rousseau, they met regularly at cafes in Paris to talk about music and philosophy and their troubles with women. Diderot was the chief editor of Encyclopedia, the first book of its kind, reference book, to subject all of the entries to rational analysis. For example, the entry on Noah's Ark tried to estimate how many man-hours Noah and his sons must have spent shoveling manure off the boat. He wrote about coal mines and fleas, about duels, bladder surgeries, stockings, metaphysics, and how to make soup. It was Denis Diderot who said, "Man will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest." It's the birthday of Helen Churchill Candy, born in New York City, 1858, who wrote a how-to guide in 1900 entitled How Women May Earn a Living. She had to do that after her husband became so abusive that she had to leave him with her two children. She wrote books about the decorative arts, a novel, moved to Washington, and became an interior decorator. She was in Europe early in 1912 and sailed back home on the Titanic on its maiden voyage, was rescued aboard lifeboat number 6, and wrote all about it for Collier's Weekly magazine. And it's the birthday of the rocket scientist Robert Goddard, born in Worcester, Massachusetts, 1882. He was inspired by H.G. Wells's The War of the Worlds to try firing rockets. Made a liquid-fueled rocket in 1914, and then one that ran on solid fuel. On this date in 1926, he completed his first successful launch. The New York Times made fun of him back in 1926, and in 1969, after Apollo 11 left for the moon, the Times printed an apology, but Goddard had been dead for 24 years. Here's a poem for today by Diane Ackerman, Come Picnic on Mars, for Zoe, age 5. On a distant glad November when our hearts are running high and the dream bats all have vanished into the limestone of the sky, why don't we take a fiery stroll straight up to Mars, just you and I? We will pack a mental picnic for years before we go. Some will say the sky's the limit, but we will answer no. The mind was made to travel. So too indentured hearts and knitted fears unravel with adventure in the dark. A world of blues will slowly dwindle as Mars glows round the bend. The differences that blind us will bind us in the end. For wonder is the chorus that makes us all a choir. And time will not forgive us if slugabeds we lie fat and bored and cranky in our hammock in the sky. So come and take the waters that jet across the seas that lie between the planets we crawl to on metal knees. Oh, when we arrive, what fancy stuff we'll see, the swooning sands of paradise, dust devils, a volcanic sea. Then when twilight falls, by double moon, we'll feast on Ratatouille. Come Picnic on Mars, a poem by Diane Ackerman from Jaguar of Sweet Laughter, published by Vintage Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the 3 most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012 at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Reed and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
27 minutes after before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News. This is Juno Afternoon, Pat Moore, your host today, and right now it's the Kim Hour. I have Kim and Kim with me. Kim Metcalf and Kim Naylor, who both work with the City Museum, are here to tell us very briefly about a First Friday exhibit that celebrates the centennial of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. Hi.
Hi. Hello.
Yeah. So what's up?
We have the opening tonight, the First Friday, and it's from 4:30 to 7:30 at the Juno Douglas City Museum. And Kim Metcalf is actually not an employee of the City Museum, but she has worked on this exhibit, and she has edited a book called In Sisterhood, and she's here to speak to us about that.
Thanks. I'm not an employee there. I actually work for the State Employees Union, but this is a sideline. And in 2008, I published In Sisterhood. It's a series of oral interviews, an oral history about the Alaska Native Sisterhood. But Jane Lindsay, who's the director of the museum, asked me if I could put something together for the 100th anniversary of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. And so the show is taken from a lot of the photographs that appear in the Sisterhood book, but the focus is the Brotherhood and what the Alaska Native Brotherhood has done for Juneau, sort of a local perspective on the Alaska Native Brotherhood. which was formed here in Juneau, actually in November of 1912. Hmm. So it does have its roots in Juneau. Sitka has the first camp of the Alaska Native Brotherhood, but Juneau was actually its birthplace.
Kim, will you actually be there tonight to talk to folks?
I will, yeah. And I'd be happy to explain. There's 13 what the museum calls labels. I call them, they're panels, they're photographic panels with text on them. But I'll be happy to explain who's in the pictures. And also Marie Olson, Tlingit Elder, will be there. And she's the one that can really explain because she knew everybody that's in the photographs.
So these photographs, you said, were taken through what period?
Well, they start in the early 1900s. A lot of the pictures are from people's private collections, and I collected them when I put the book together, from the people who were interviewed for the book. So, and some of them are pictures I got elsewhere for this exhibit. But most of them are local people who were involved in the Alaska Native Brotherhood or the Alaska Native Sisterhood, and as I said, the focus is on what the organization has done locally.
So, Kim Naylor, will these be on exhibit for a while?
Yeah, the exhibit runs until February 13, 2013, okay. So it'll be on display for a while. But tonight is the night that we can have Kim.
Tonight you get Kim and
That's
refreshments, right?
That's right, and refreshments, yes,
yeah, okay, so a big plus. Okay, so what else is happening at the museum that people might want to look at if they come tonight?
Sure. Well, one thing I wanted to mention is that we are on free winter admission, and that's for the month of October. It's the Pioneers of Alaska, the Men and Women's Igloo Number 6. And they're supporting us for the month of October. And our winter hours are from 10 to 4, Tuesday through Saturday. And we have one thing we have coming up is the coffee and collections on October 20th. And that's with Kim Metcalf will be there, and we'll be discussing more in Sisterhood. We'll be discussing the book more.
I think it's more about the exhibit, actually.
Oh, okay.
And I hope to have Marie Olson and some other members of the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood there to speak about, the organization. This is all from a local perspective. The organization is all throughout Southeast Alaska, but we're focusing on Juneau with this exhibit and with the talk on October 20th. And that's at 10:30 in the morning. It's a Saturday morning lecture series.
Wonderful. Well, Kim Metcalf, Kim Naylor, thank you so much for dropping in and telling us about what's going on for First Friday. Go over to the City Museum at 4:30, folks, and meet Kim Metcalf, look at these wonderful historical photos, and then drop back by for the presentation at 10:30 on what date?
October 20th.
On October 20th.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
A little music here by Tracy Spring. She's part of a circle of artists who are going to be performing at Resurrection Lutheran Church 7:30 Saturday night.
My soul goodbye. Here it comes. coming. Here it go, no devil is on palindrome. On the tip of my tongue, like the evening sun falling, rising into dawn, I know I'm going, coming home.
Hi, this is Nancy from the Alaskan Brewing Company inviting you to this year's Tudor Beer Tasting, Saturday, October 20th at 4 p.m., right before the annual Festival of Seafood. Brought to you by KTUO, KRNN, KXLL, Taku Smokeries, Abby's Kitchen, and the Silver Bow Bakery. Learn the details involved in brewing a world-class beer and finish it all off with a great seafood dinner. It's all happening at the Juno Yacht Club on Saturday, October 20th. Tickets are available online at ktuo.org, at the station, and at the door.
It's 20 minutes before 4 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon. My next guest is going to be giving a presentation at the Downtown Library tonight. It's called Visual Art and Story, Connecting with Kids. Author and illustrator Terry Sloat is with us. Hi, Terry.
Hi. How are you?
I'm really good.
I don't get to ask the questions.
No, you know, certainly. Ask me anything you want. I'm ready to go. So tonight you're going to be looking at an audience of whom?
I hope adults and children. What I'm going to be talking about is the visual art of storytelling. And what I've learned in the last several years is that even though books started out to be my initial package for my art and my storytelling, that there are many other ways to present them, and part of that is gallery art, and people are very, adults especially, the child in all of us likes to see an image and learn a story from it or make up a story to go with it, and that's what I hope my art does, whether it's in the books or on the wall.
On your really wonderful online biography, in which you introduce yourself as a princess, you talk about the fact that you came to this because your mother loved to read you stories, and eventually you learned that you loved to draw pictures about the stories.
Yeah,
are you still doing that?
I am, and my mother was a role model. She read to kids in our neighborhood until we moved her at 89. She still had kids that whose parents didn't read to them coming to her door at 7:30 or 7, depending on how late it was, dark it was, to be read to. And it just showed how hungry kids were to be read to. But the feeling of being in her lap and always having a story made books and I have a pretty romantic connection. And whether it was with the pictures or my mother's words, she was just so bright about knowing how important that was. So I fell in love with books, and I fell in love with the pictures in them, and especially pictures that could make you kind of go off into another world. And for me, the pleasure of making a book or an image on a wall or a series of images is you get to walk into that image and leave where you are and stay there and dream.
Now, a lot of your books that you've illustrated and written have been about themes about Alaska.
Right.
And the reason is because you spent quite some time as a teacher in the bush.
Yeah, when in 1970, my husband and I got married and came up to Alaska the next day and went out to Nunapichuk, which is on the Johnson River. And shortly after that, we went to Kiana to take teachers' places who had left. And then at the old age of 22, we were given our own school in Kotlik and had a two-teacher school. So a lot of my experiences are listening to storytellers, dancers, and it shows in my wall art, my gallery art, as well as the books. Some of the books that I've written, they are folk tales that we have seen danced. The dancing is in some of the stories, like mm-hmm. Dance on a Sealskin. The stories that I heard were really all so rooted in the earth that they're a pleasure to tell. And actually, a lot of the stories are not meant for books. They are really meant just to be told out loud. And so sorting through those has been a lifetime project.
It's a really interesting distinction because many people in our print oriented and actually now more visually oriented, but still with a lot of print involved mm-hmm. in it, have a sense that that's the way communications is. And the communication really started out as an oral thing.
It did.
And
I've been going out to some of the villages in the last few years, working with storytellers, actually just talking to them. They'll have me come up, and I'm not really teaching anything. We are talking about the decision about when the story becomes recorded. It's very flat. It's missing all the mm-hmm. hand gestures, the expressions. But that storyteller needs to be honored. So do you change his words? Does perhaps a, quote, better storyteller, more animated storyteller in print, retell those words and breathe life back into them? And a great thing was about 5 years ago, I went to London to an International Board of Books conference called IBBY. And the theme was No Child is an Island. It was a case for children's books in translation. And the overall theme of the meeting was that when books are translated, no matter what language they're in, the first translation is flat. So to expect that to be the translation that the child is going to hear and feel what the oral storyteller told is not possible. So at some point, if that's going to become a book that's passed on to young people and carried on, the decision has to be made whether to take liberties with words and create a word that contains both the gesture and the meaning.
So basically what you're talking about is that same point of friction that happens when you take a book and turn it into a film.
Yes.
Because people go to the Harry Potter films and they say, nothing like what I was reading on the page. Well, of course it's not, because we're in a totally different medium here, folks. And you can't do what she did on the page, on the screen. So.
But there are some that have almost accomplished that.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and those are the gems that stand out.
Of Mice and Men right now, which is playing at Perseverance.
Which I saw last night. It was wonderful.
Written as a stage play in novel form.
And I just wrote to a friend of mine today that play, no offense to Dustin Hoffman, was better than the movie.
Ooh. there's a review, folks.
Yes, I know. It was truer to the novel than the movie.
That's the kind of constructive criticism that an artist likes to hear.
Now you can ban my conversation.
No, I'm sure Boston Christopher is sitting out there listening to the radio and nodding right now. Anyway, yes, I would reiterate what we've been saying all week is you got to go see this. I think Saturday night and Sunday are the last two.
Mm-hmm.
So
tonight, I was happy I got to see it.
Yeah,
the actors were wonderful.
Yeah.
But tonight, I hope the kids and parents that come, there are a lot of parents with a lot of kids left inside of them, and to see that I work a lot like a child, I think will be interesting. I went back to looking at how children do their art and why I ever left that behind, the shapes and the colors and the things that excited me, and I've worked back towards that both in my books and my gallery art. So I hope that I brought some dummy books to look at and some sketches, and hopefully we'll have a good conversation.
Hey, Terry, what time does your thing start?
Starts at 5. There's a reception at 5 with good food and just a chance to visit and to look at some of the art that I brought and some of the dummy books that I brought, and then I'll give a talk starting at 6.
You know, not everything on our first Fridays is really oriented toward children, and this is a wonderful opportunity to involve your kids in a first Friday activity that is just practically made for them and probably made for you as well.
I think it is.
Terry Sloat, it should be an amazing conversation with you tonight with all of the things you're going to have to show us and like that.
I'll look forward to it.
Downtown Library starting at 5 o'clock. Terry, thanks so much for coming down and telling us about it.
Perseverance Theater opens its 34th season with John Steinbeck's classic Of Mice and Men. Moving from job to job, trying to build a stake, George and Lenny dream of having their own ranch someday. Everything finally begins to appear possible until a beautiful and lonely girl changes their lives forever. Artistic director Art Roach directs this powerful tale of friendship and shattered dreams. Of Mice and Men is now playing through October 7th. For more information, visit perseverancetheater.org, Hearthside Books, or call 463-TIXS.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
That's the architectural design class at Clark Middle School in Anchorage, working on their current project at the end of a regular school day. The bell rings and kids scatter, but a few stay to talk about the work this class did last year. These students worked with real architects to help conceptualize a new park space in their Mountain View neighborhood. Here's their teacher, Heather McIntyre.
The first step that they really wanted to was to come up with a theme for the park. They didn't just want to throw in a bunch of random play equipment. They actually wanted it to be drawn together. And more of, Mountain View community has quite a few playgrounds, but they don't have a real artistic, relaxing place. So that was kind of what they were looking for. And the kids were working together, and they came up with this global theme that ended up being the main tie-in of the park to celebrate the diversity of Mountain View. And I think the final term for it was Global Village.
14-year-old Philip says he had fun working on the project.
And what did you think was the most fun part?
It was when we were designing and building and thinking of what to put in the park to make it more amusing for the little kids to have fun on.
The park includes performance space as well as community artwork. The teens asked the student body to decorate ceramic tiles that will be displayed at the park, and more than 100 kids made designs. 14-year-old student architect Jacob says it will be cool to see the park once it's done.
It would remind me of all of what we went through and all the fun that we had. If I see people out there playing with it and seeing them having fun, it'd make me have fun.
I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
Summer is over, and that means it's time for Gold Street Music. Our first event for this winter season will be on Saturday, October 6th at Resurrection Lutheran Church at 10th and Glacier Avenue. The concert begins at 7:30 p.m. and the tickets are available at the door. This month we present a special event, a song circle of six songwriters, including Tracy Spring, Martha Scott and Betsy Sims, T.R. Ritchie, Irene Muller, Michael Howard and Pat Henry. Mike Truax will kick it off. Please join us at Gold Street Music.
Thank you.
Barney McClure stepping away from the piano keyboard for a moment or two there to put his hands on a Hammond B3 organ and doing a tune called Big Alice for us. GCI will be performing some plant upgrade work on Whittier Street. This begins this Sunday and will continue throughout the day. So this means that between Egan and Willoughby Avenue, there will be vehicle access closed except for single-lane local access. So brief delays should be expected. So keep an eye out for men working along the road because GCI is going to be working out there from 6 o'clock in the morning Sunday until they finish up some upgrade work on the plant at Whittier Street. So keep your eyes out open for that. On General Afternoon tomorrow, or on Monday, actually, Katie Bowser will be in, and she'll be talking about the second season of Mudrooms. Amanda Compton and Alita Buss will be coming in to talk about that. David Lindrum, Margaret Tharp will be here. They'll preview Wednesday's workshop, Landscape as a Language, and Friday's sale auction will be talked about. And Carlene and Roger Grummet will drop by to talk about the Empty Chairs Project. So tune in for Katie Bowser on Monday on Juno Afternoon at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The weather, oh, what a wonderful weekend we're looking at here. These clouds and fog and like that are going to probably decrease tonight. Through the night, we'll probably have a little bit of that light rain this evening. And then tomorrow morning when you wake up, it'll be partly cloudy, and it should be partly cloudy all the way through Tuesday. Isn't that nice? You're in tune with KTOO Juno. We're on 104.3 FM in downtown Juno, but we're also on a set of translators throughout the area in the Valley and Auk Bay. You can tune to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, you hear us on K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus gets a signal from KTOO on 88.1 megahertz. The translator is K201 AM. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. And an excursion inlet in Icy Strait, you can listen on 89.9 as K210 AS relays our signal to the excursion inlet in Icy Strait. In town here, you can get KTOO on GCI Cable Juno. We're on digital channel 871. And digital channel 872 is KRNN. KXLL is found at 873. And anytime you want to, you can tune to www.ktoo.org on your computer and pop the button to play all three of our stations. The music in the background, of course, is provided to us by Barney McClure. The concert is tonight. They've been doing through the cabaret all week long, getting set. A bunch of local artists practicing songs with Barney, and they'll present them to the audience tonight at the Jack.